Okay, real talk. When did paying someone back become social media?
What do you mean?
Like, say I want to see what you're doing and who you're hanging with, and you're not posting about it on your story. I can just stalk your pay app and find out what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. You do that?
No, I don't do that. I use Apple Cash. It's built into your iPhone, easy and secure. You can send and receive money right in messages and keep it between friends, and then use that money to buy something at a store with Apple Pay.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Maybe.
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Zarin!
Yes.
Look out.
Sorry, I was just napping.
Yeah, no, wake up.
You snuck in here.
Sleeping on the beach. Listen, come here.
Yeah.
You know what's ridiculous?
I do.
Oh, please, share.
All right. I'm just going to tell just you.
Okay.
Last year at the, you know the artist Pink?
Sure.
The performer.
All right. She flings herself around and
yeah,
such.
Exactly, with the fabrics and stuff in the sky. Okay, so she had her summer carnival tour last year.
Muscular
2023.
Gal.
Very muscular. She was over there in the UK, right? I think they call it the Britain.
Yeah.
She was at Hyde Park in London.
Okay,
performing,
yeah.
Right? And somebody's like, oh, hey, you know, like our fans will throw like stuff on stage. Like if it's some people, they'll throw like a joint or they'll throw like a bra or like, you know.
Our fans like rude dudes?
No, like just fans in America.
Oh.
The fans in America, Elizabeth. Not our fans. I would call them rude dudes. But like the fans in America, yeah. When they like a musician, they'll throw things. Like drugs or like underwear,
underpants,
right?
Yeah.
Well, in the UK, they threw a whole wheel of brie, and they just gave her a wheel of brie, right? She's like, "Oh, thanks. I don't know what to do with this. What is this, Belgium? Okay, what is this tradition?" That wasn't the weirdest thing she got. Another fan was like, "Oh, wait, I got something too, right?" And they threw up a baggie, and in the baggie was like, it looked like powder, right? She's like, "What is this? Like heroin? I don't do that kind of drug." Like, no, that's turns out it was ashes, Elizabeth.
No.
Ashes. Pink looked at the fan and she said, and I quote, "Is this your mom?"
Stop it.
It was the fan's cremated.
Oh, no.
The cremains had been tossed. Like, I don't know if that's like her mom loved Pink. She loved Pink so much. She's like, "Here's my mom." I don't know how this
what
goes.
What in the world?
But Pink had a moment where someone handed her first a wheel of brie
and
then a bag of cremains. And she had to perform. In front of all
I don't even
people.
Know.
The lives that stars lead.
Right? They're just
there
like
you go,
us.
Right?
Stars are just like us.
Okay, ridiculous.
Do you know what else is ridiculous?
No.
A hairdresser changing the way banks build their vaults.
Yeah, wow.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous.
Yeah.
Zarin.
Yo.
You ever cut your own hair?
Yeah, all the time, actually. Most, like, the last, I don't know, 10 years I've been the one to cut my hair. I haven't been to a barber. I've been to a barber once since the turn of this century.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I went to a barber, to a black barber in Oakland, and I said, "Give me the Muhammad Ali." "Nope, give me the Cassius Clay." And I said, and then he knew exactly what I meant. And I made that distinction.
Yeah.
So I got this really cool, tight, like early 60s flat top. And that was nice. That was the last time I got a haircut.
And so you were cutting
dreads back out.
Yeah, you were cutting off dreads when you did that.
I did that. That's the first time I cut dreads, and then I grew them back out. And so now I cut the sides. And so I'll use a, you know, whatever trimmer to do the sides.
Sure, sure.
Clippers.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I used to cut my own hair.
Really? That seems a little more difficult than me doing it.
Well, I went to a salon once and the hairdresser was all coked out and gave me like...
Aren't they always?
Probably, but she gave me the world's worst haircut.
Oh, really?
Like, it was so short.
Oh, God.
And it was, like, she kept trying to fix and balance things. And then
more.
Suddenly I had short hair and then
more.
Shorter and
cutting,
shorter. Yeah. And then I looked like a Cub Scout.
And then you look like a Marine.
Oh, it was terrible. And I stopped going to salons for a long time after that. I just cut my hair at home. But like, it helped that I was trying to be all shaggy rocker back in the day.
Yes.
So I basically just did like bad razor cuts on myself and dragged a pair of scissors through my hair.
Oh.
To make it shaggy.
Sure.
And then it was dyed all blue, black, and a ton of product in it.
Okay.
Who cared?
All right.
But then after that, like I kind of got through that, but then I was too broke to go to a salon and I just maintained normal hair at home. Then I realized I'm a grown up. And I needed to bite the bullet and get a decent haircut.
You a grown-ass woman.
I know. So I've been going to hairdressers ever since, and they've all been great.
What's that like? Has stuff changed since the 20th century?
It has. My current hairdresser, Hannah, she's amazing, and I love her. Sometimes when she's cutting my hair, she has her little dog, Oscar, in a sling on her chest.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Oscar has, like, no teeth, and his tongue hangs out. But it makes the haircut look and feel so much better.
I bet.
Yeah, it's incredible. Most hairdressers are total artists. Like,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Hannah is.
The hair is their medium.
It's a difficult medium in which to work, you know?
Unforgiving.
Totally. And like most, that's someone you got to tip.
Yes,
speaking
definitely.
Speaking on Tuesday about tipping, that's who you got to really
definitely.
Tip. Because,
but once again, they do something.
But it's high stakes.
Yes.
It's high.
They do something really important.
Yeah. Like if they mess up, then, you know.
You got weeks, if not months, of looking janky.
Exactly. Years in my case.
Oh, wow.
So.
Your hair goes that slow.
Yeah. So, like most artists, many hairdressers, they're meticulous. They have a certain perspective, fine skills, and they apply them to other things.
Sure.
It's like drawing or handiwork or crafts.
Yeah, often artistic.
Or crime.
Oh, yeah.
They're criming,
I can see
this. There are criming hairdressers.
Of course.
Here.
Why not?
They exist.
They're artists.
They're part of the crimer community, too.
Welcome in.
And they're sometimes successful and they're sometimes not.
Is this like about that movie Shampoo? That's the only thing I know.
Oh, my God. Close. So there's actually a scam going around right now with hairdressers.
Oh, really?
And here's how it happens. Someone posts somewhere like Facebook or something asking for a recommendation for a stylist.
Okay.
And then a person claiming to be a stylist will respond and say, I'd love to work with you. And like, I can get you a discount at my salon and say that it's like this huge discount that they can get. But all the potential client has to do is just put down like $40, $50, maybe $85 to deposit to hold their spot because the hairdresser is in such high demand. And like in a lot of places, that's not unusual. Like when I go to get my hair cut, they hold the credit card.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then if I don't show, I get charged.
Yeah, holding a credit card, not being charged, that's one thing.
But this, like...
But paying a little juice to get a spot.
And a lot of these scams, they prey on people who are looking for braiders because it's so expensive.
Yes. And time-consuming.
That is a crazy labor-intensive art.
And also, that person's only going to be able to work so much on that Saturday, you know what I mean, or whatever day
you
have them.
Yeah, and hours and hours and hours.
They want that scheduling tight.
And because it's so expensive, if you find out you can get a discount... Mm-hmm. So, like, the phony braider will promise this great price for top-notch work. They'll send pictures of their work, and it's always just mind-blowing. So the mark gets sent a link to a scheduling website, and they book a time. And the site looks legit, and the address is to a real salon on there, like the physical address, and it's always a nice salon.
Mm-hmm.
So then the mark has to send the deposit to the stylist, like, through Venmo or whatever.
Of course, yeah.
And then,
which seems legit because that's so common now.
Yeah, exactly. And then they show up at the appointment and the owner of the salon.
Like, who are you? I've never heard of you.
You're not on the books. Uh-huh. I've never even heard of this stylist.
Yeah.
The mark tries to contact the stylist, no dice. And so, like, it's a small-scale scam, but it's getting more and more prevalent.
This is why you always have to take things from word of mouth. If you don't know someone who knows this scam or, you know, this person who's offering you the legitimate offer, then...
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do it.
And so, but there are bigger scammers, of course.
Oh, of course.
For example, Tina Roberts, a.k.a. the Black Widow.
Ooh.
Right? It's a scary name. She was a con artist. Some called her the devil in disguise.
Ooh.
Now, with a name and a description like that, what did she do?
I'm thinking she steals scalps.
It sounds like she's going to use up a 1% over here.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it.
She conned her clients. It's like totally overhyped.
I thought like scissors in the neck or some
no,
stuff.
The, you truth, know, like, the truth is that one
old men were getting it.
One victim called her that, and then all the UK tabloids just ran with it.
UK tabloids are the worst.
They're
about hyperbole.
Out of control.
No, you cannot ever get a sense of scale or perspective from anything because everything's the worst, the last, it's insane. This is never going to happen again. This
exactly.
Like, come on, people.
Yeah. So
I thought you guys were good with history.
Tina Roberts, the Black Widow, which I don't even know why you would give her this name.
No, exactly. You're wasting it.
She doesn't even really have like black hair.
This is
like,
a lot of Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah.
Or no, Peter, was it Crying Wolf? Not Peter and the Wolf.
And it's Peter and the Wolf. There's a lot of oboe action.
Exactly.
So she's running all these cons. 2011.
Could you imagine a hair salon where every hair cutter had their own musical instrument?
As they're cutting
like,
it.
Like doing a Peter and the Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That and the customers too. They also have
It's just the noisiest. It's way noisier than a normally noisy slut.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go on. The Black Widow, yes.
She gets convicted of scamming a terminally ill cancer patient, banks, clients, as well as her own friends for £1 million.
Damn.
She posed as the England rugby team's physiotherapist. It's like to establish credibility.
Totally. The national rugby team.
Yeah. And she said that she got that gig after she saved the life of former English coach Sir Clive Woodward.
Oh, yeah.
That she performed a tracheotomy at a school match.
Using just a Bic pen.
Yeah, right? Another former England coach was like, that's not true. But, you know, who's going to check
it? Tracheotomy.
Yeah, right? So she's running this business where she's offering people nutritional advice, sports therapy, massage, but she's not qualified for it.
Doesn't sound like it.
She has, like, training in basic massage.
And I do, too. You do, too. I think being an adult, you have training in basic massage.
I'm good at massaging dogs. I can
relax
dogs.
There you go. See?
So once she got a client, she'd steal their credit card information and just go to town.
Okay.
But that's not all. According to the Southern Daily Echo newspaper, she told her marks that, quote, she could not pay bills because the police had seized her computer and she'd been defrauded by an employee of HSBC, resulting in cash flow problems. And she desperately needed cash to buy supplies as she'd been working for the British cycling team.
She just moves
so
it all
like,
around.
I'm a victim here. So help me. So one of her clients, this
help
guy,
me help you.
Peter Lelliott, loaned her almost £300,000.
Are you kidding
me? No, I'm not kidding you. She took all the cash. Now, remember, it's like £1 million in total. And she went on these crazy vacations to the Seychelles and South Africa.
At least she did something with it.
But it's like they can't get, like, she's buying experiences. So you can't recoup that money.
Oh, no. Which is like, that's why I think it's brilliant. She's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, there
it is.
Can't give it back. So she eventually gets caught. She's sentenced to 7 years. But is she going to give up?
No, not her.
Not on
she's
your
plucky.
Life. She got a 7-year sentence, but she was out before that because in 2015, she was back at it.
I'm telling you.
So now she was a hairdresser.
Okay.
She had a mobile business.
She likes to work the body. Okay.
Yeah, totally. She has this mobile business, no set storefront.
Of course. Good call.
And she would generally service elderly clients who couldn't make it out of the house too easily, but they still wanted to look and feel like $1 million.
Of course.
Yeah. The clients loved her.
Of course, because she made them feel beautiful.
She was charming.
Fun.
She told great stories. And the stories that she told, a lot of them were about her celebrity clients.
Of course. Oh, yes.
Because, like, see, the stars loved that she would go to them. And they got privacy and her incredible artistic skill. So she's telling all these old grannies about, you know, which star of the EastEnders she's been cutting.
Okay.
So once she'd get into their confidences, she would tell the clients about an investment opportunity that she had. And because of the high-profile names that she was dropping, they all thought she was on the up and up. And she wasn't at first telling them, do you want to invest?
Well, this is where the problem with word of mouth actually goes wrong. Because they know her and it seems like she knows them.
It seems like she would know. And so she's telling them about this great deal. And then they're like, wait, I want in on this. So she says, look, if you want in, give me the money and it'll double. We can double it. Seven women gave her somewhere between £225 a piece and £2,500 each. In total, £13,000 between 2015 and 2016.
Man.
Let's hear from some of the victims, shall we?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Phyllis King, age 63, from Barnstaple, Devon. She told the Bristol Post, quote, I feel upset, betrayed, and very bitter towards her. She is the Black Widow. She will spin you a web of lies.
She's the one who
gave
her the
Phyllis.
Name.
Okay. Phyllis did it.
Phyllis is the one with the can turn a phrase.
A criminal nickname is born.
Okay.
She also told the Bristol Post, quote, the money was going to be used to take my mom, who's in her 80s, on holiday.
Whoa.
Yeah. Man. Horrible. Talisa White, 43, from Bristol, she got scammed out of $2,000. She said, quote, The fraud against me was £2,000 and meant our children had nothing for Christmas. I'm hacked off.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. I know, but hacked, like, off. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, she's hacked off. But then also she gave away the Christmas money.
Yeah, no.
Come on now. Allison Coates from Weston-super-Mare, mm-hmm. Somerset. She lost 225 pounds to the Black Widow. She said, quote, I couldn't pay my care bill and I couldn't buy Christmas presents.
Always with the Christmas presents.
Again. Yeah. Come on, don't, you know. Jane Foster, she lost 1,800 pounds. Mm-hmm. She said, quote, she's very sweet, very charming, very manipulative and cunning. Butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. I would say she's a devil in disguise. So that's the second part of it. Wow. But also, I love butter wouldn't melt in her mouth.
Yeah, she's one cool character.
Total cool character. And of course, Roberts was caught. She admitted to 10 charges of fraud, and she was sentenced to 2 years and 3 months. And the judge told her at her sentencing, quote, your victims in many cases were particularly vulnerable by reason of disability that left them housebound. You conned them by your lies, and you were running a successful hairdressing business, which listed celebrities among its clients. Like, as if she wasn't there. He just gives her a recap.
He's doing exposition.
She's like, yeah, I know, I did all that.
It's like the writers are clunky on this show, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. The anvil of exposition just came down. Her defense solicitor mm-hmm. said that she set up a legal, legit business and that she had planned to pay back her, quote unquote, investors. And he was like, some of the cash was even repaid.
How do some lawyers say the things they say? Know. How do you stand in front of someone who you're going to have to stand in front again in the future and be like, yeah, this one, she thought
this
they
one
were
who's
in,
done,
investors. Yeah, yeah, that's the ticket.
She's done time for conning people in the past.
Exactly.
And they're like, all she owes now is 10,500 pounds. Out of 13,000. So it's not like, oh, she paid down hundreds of thousands. No. So that's the Black Widow,
yes.
Who for such a name is a disappointment.
Very.
She wasn't smart,
no.
Really. And she was.
And her victims. I really, come on.
That really, that cheeses me off.
Well, there. You know, we talk a lot. It's important who you pick, you know?
Like, totally.
It's not just that we don't root for the criminals. It's uh-uh. Like, okay, the targets are part of it.
Exactly.
You rob like an old museum. I'm not going to feel so bad as if you rob an old person.
Right, right. And take people's Christmas money.
Yeah.
She was brash, but she wasn't clever.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't meticulous.
Oh, no.
That's the thing. That's
sloppy.
Why she probably always wasn't a good hairdresser.
Probably not.
Either.
Good call, Elizabeth.
I have a main course for you here. You
Ooh.
Talked about like who you're going to steal from.
Yeah.
This is the cut and styling after the wash and rinse of the Black Widow.
I don't do
the,
what is this? Is this good?
Yeah, this is good,
right?
This is the next
phase. It seems
phase.
Like I should be excited.
Phase two.
Okay.
So I'm talking about a man who was so smart, it was his name.
Smart?
William Smarto. Real name.
How do you find these people? Bum Fardo, Bill Smarto. Why are you just making these things names up?
William Smarto. That's his real name.
Yes, old Bill Smarto. Uh-huh, sure,
In the 70s.
You dream this story.
Bill Smarto. He was a hairdresser at the Velvet Brush.
Bill Smarto, the hairdresser at Velvet Brush.
At the Velvet Brush.
This is all made up.
In Deerfield, Illinois. One day I am just going to make one up as I go. It'll be fun.
Deerfield, Illinois?
Yeah. I've done all I can to find out more about this salon, but mm-hmm. I've come up empty. Like, I tried to go through old phone books, mm-hmm. newspapers. It's killing me because I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to know where it was, the physical location. But he wasn't just a hairdresser there. He was the owner, too.
Owner-operator. Nice.
So here he is, styling hair in the northern suburbs of Chicago in the 70s, swinging. Very shampoo. He had a wife and two kids.
Good for him.
And he had siblings, including one named Vincent.
Nice.
So William and Vincent, they
Vincent
have
Vincent Smarto.
Vincent Smarto.
Vinny Smarto.
Vinny and Bobby Smarto. They had a hobby, and it all started with safe deposit boxes.
Okay.
So in 1978.
I hope their hobby is savings.
Vincent, yes. He started going to banks and renting safe deposit boxes under the name John Barrow.
Okay.
Which is not to be confused with one of the other great idiot aliases, John Barron.
And isn't John Barrow, oh, that's Clyde Barrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bonnie and Clyde,
yeah.
Barrow.
John Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay.
John, call me Wheel.
Yeah, Wheelbarrow.
So one of the places that they rented boxes was the First National Bank of Deerfield.
Okay.
And they went to visit the boxes dozens and dozens of times. They cased the joint. So while one would distract the vault attendant, the other one would scope out the particulars of the room. And each time they'd bring something with them to put in the boxes. And that's to be expected.
Yeah.
But what Bobby Smarto was bringing in were tools, bank burglary tools,
mm-hmm.
right into the lion's den.
Okay.
And so one of the times he went in the vault, and I'm guessing you know, this is like when he asked for privacy to look at the contents of his safe deposit box, he punched two holes in the alarm system sound sensors in the ceiling.
Oh, wow.
And then into said holes, he put two alarm clocks and he nested them in like the dropped false ceiling.
How good is the distraction guy?
That's what I want to know.
This is incredible.
He's like, ooh.
He's like, oh, you feel tense. Here, let me massage your shoulders.
Yeah, exactly.
Here. I'm like, geez.
So Smarto, he had set the alarms to ring for after the bank closed.
Okay.
And then he and his brother, they camped out watching the bank overnight.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to see if the cops came when the alarm clocks went off.
Set off the sound. Yeah.
No, they didn't.
Smart.
And that's how they knew the vault alarm didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, let's take a break.
Oh.
And when we come back, we're going to look at phase two of the heist.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Springtime is all about fresh air and fresh starts. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. It's the only home security system I use and recommend. Here's why I love it. With the days getting longer and the weather warming up, we're out and about a lot more. And that applies to criminals, too. I don't have to worry because Simply Safe blankets my whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. And there are indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over my property day and night. It's not just cameras. Simply Safe has professional monitoring agents who keep watch on your home when you aren't there. Agents can stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and the police are on their way. Sounds great, right? There's no contract, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. So trying Simply Safe is risk-free. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplysafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You are so welcome for those ads. You're welcome, world.
So juicy.
Yeah, it was so juicy.
Do you have a napkin?
Yeah, clean yourself up.
Yes.
You're embarrassing yourself. William Smarto.
Yes.
I'll get you a rag. Owner and operator of the Velvet Brush Hair Salon.
Yes. And why is that name so hilarious?
I don't know. It's so good.
Ooh, it's a velvet
it's
brush.
It's a velvet brush.
Like, who's ever, do you use a velvet brush?
No.
I've never even heard
no.
of. They just put like a qualifier in front of brush.
The, yeah.
That one.
That sounds
a velveteen brush.
So,
no, it's too
silky
long.
Smooth.
Velvet. Sorry.
He's also
on.
A bank burglar.
Yeah.
Hello.
Good point.
So, Dateline, Sunday, July 22nd, 1979.
Good year.
Deerfield, Illinois, yes. Just north of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
First National Bank of Deerfield.
Okay.
Outside the bank, William Smarto slipped behind some bushes and he took a ventilation grate off
mm-hmm.
the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he climbed in and then he dropped into a room right outside the safe deposit vault.
Wow.
He was prepared. He brought food.
Okay.
A drill.
His first thing. He brought food.
First thing is food.
He plans to be there for a while.
He brought some hamburgers.
Okay.
He brought a drill, four crowbars, two flashlights.
A spork.
Two headlamps.
Yeah.
Two sledgehammers.
Dang.
Three chisels. He has a spare in case something goes wrong.
He's throwing a party.
Oh, yeah. Three chisels, eight screwdrivers, a vise grip, a hacksaw, and goggles.
Okay. You have an ice machine, maybe some cocktail glasses.
So he's in this room.
Uh-huh.
He's got his supplies tucked above the ceiling
sure.
tiles. Did I mention that he was dressed like a worker man?
No. Yeah. I like that detail.
He was dressed as a worker man.
Good.
So we've talked about this before, how dressing like a maintenance worker is like a really great way to slip under the radar and go somewhere you aren't supposed to go.
You're invisible unless you're a house painter because people are drawn to the colors.
Right. So Smarto, he pulled a table over to a wall and he stood on it. Mm-hmm. And he pulls out a drill and he gets to work making a hole in the wall.
Hmm.
And then there he is mid-drill when a janitor walks in.
Mm-hmm.
And he stuck to the ridiculous crime credo of act like you know.
Oh, I like it.
So he doesn't flinch. The janitor looks down at the mess all over the floor, concrete dust, like bits of plaster, metal shards. Mm-hmm. And Smarto says, when I'm through, I hope somebody's going to clean up this mess. Like, gets an attitude.
That's the way.
And the janitor's like, sighs, like, yeah, I'll clean it up, and walks away.
Mm-hmm.
That's power move right
Dude,
there.
Dude, I had a friend who every time he got pulled over, he would hop out of his car and start asking the cops for directions or for help, and the cops would always be like, oh, I don't want to deal with it. No, go for it, and would leave. I was like, it's brilliant. I tried it once. I got arrested.
Don't hop out of the car. It'll get you lit up.
I know. But I mean, like, he wouldn't like hop out like that way. He would do it before the cops even had it. Like, he would pull over and get out of immediately. So they're not thinking, and he wouldn't approach them. He'd hop up and be like, oh, thank God, I need your help.
Like,
waving at them. And then the cops would be like, no, you okay? And drive away.
Yeah,
like, that's genius.
It is pretty smart.
So yeah, I think throwing an attitude always throws people off.
Yeah.
Like, they are unbalanced. They don't expect it.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially means you should be guilty.
So Smarto gets mm-hmm. the janitor to leave there, but like the attention kind of spooked him.
Okay. So they're
thinking
both
spooked. Like, yeah. So the janitor doesn't care. He's like, this guy's a jerk. He's like every other, you know, maintenance guy.
Oh, okay.
Comes in here and has
away.
An attitude.
Okay, sure.
But Smarto's like, oh, this isn't good. So he gives up on the Deerfield Bank, looks for another target, just ditches it.
Wow. So I like that. Good call.
Yeah. William and Vincent, they knew what they wanted. They wanted banks in rich neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So the next stop, First National Bank of Barrington. It's okay. Another Chicago suburb.
Okay.
So Smarto, he gets the box under the alias. And like last time, he visits it dozens and dozens of times. Each time, he'd bring tools to stash in the boxes and in the ceiling tiles.
Mm-hmm.
And four flashlights this time. A sledgehammer, a crowbar, three screwdrivers, tape, batteries, a wire stripper, a trowel.
A 78 tape player.
Scissors, pliers, steel bolts. And he brought a change of clothes to hide in there.
No food this time, change of clothes.
And he did the whole alarm clock in the ceiling thing.
It's like, I found I wasn't hungry, but I definitely wanted a new outfit.
I really did want a new outfit. So, costume change. Saturday, April 11th, 1981, the regular vault attendant was on vacation and no one else was on duty.
Okay.
And then all investigators could later figure was that Smarto used a credit card to get past a glass door that led to the vault.
Wow.
So he like jimmies his way in. Then he crawled up to the top of the safety deposit boxes
mm-hmm.
and dropped into a corner where there was a 24-inch square open space.
Mm-hmm. And that's between like in between the corner and the wall?
Yeah. So like there are two walls of safe deposit boxes and where they meet in the corner,
there's
that
an empty square
dead space.
Yeah, I got you.
So bank employees, they had no idea that there was a dead space in that corner. They never thought about it. The vault's door, because this is a Saturday, the vault's door closes at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And then it was one of those time lock jobs.
One open till Monday.
Yeah, 7:30 in the morning Monday.
Okay,
that's
when
they got to wait. So 1 o'clock, vault locks.
Huh.
10 minutes later, the alarm went off. And the police arrived. They checked the bank. They couldn't find anything suspicious. They leave. 10 minutes after that, the alarm goes off again. Now, both the cops, the bank employees, they're thinking the alarm's malfunctioning. This is, you know.
It's electrical. We got a squirrel in the cables.
Totally. And so the alarm was tripping because Smarto was like getting himself situated and setting up. But it was this genius plan, or was it serendipity? Whatever.
Yeah.
Everyone's ignoring the alarms. So Smarto's in there for the weekend now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's ready to get chopping.
Okay.
Come Monday morning, a bank teller sitting in her car in the bank parking lot before the bank opened saw a man in work clothes come out of the bank carrying two duffel bags.
He waited till Monday morning. Early.
Well, he was stuck in the vault.
Oh, time right, lock. Of course. Right.
7:30, it opens up. So she's waiting, like she probably starts at 8.
So you can just open from the inside at 7:30. That's interesting.
Yeah.
They could spin the wheel or whatever.
I guess.
Yeah, huh.
And so she sees, or maybe like it opened up and then he popped out of the dead space.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, either way, yeah.
She sees a guy in work clothes coming out of the bank carrying mm-hmm. two duffel bags. Mm-hmm. And she thinks that's a little weird.
Yeah.
She goes into work and she sees the same guy leaving the vault again, this time with another two duffel bags. And she's like, well, it must be a maintenance guy. I mean, after all, we had those alarm issues on Saturday.
And they had all those duffel bags.
Those are
they
all the dead all squirrels that had chewed through the wiring. Yeah. Zarin, close your eyes.
Oh, you snuck it up.
I always do.
You do. All right, here we go.
I want you to picture it.
My eyes are closed.
It's Monday, April 13th, 1981. You're a customer of First National Bank of Barrington, and you want to access your safety deposit box. You hop out of your lemon-yellow 1980 Cadillac Eldorado and make your way into the bank. You're whistling what you think is the song at the top of the charts, Kiss on My List by Hall & Oates, but you can't really carry a tune. It's close, though. It's close. You enter the bank, people chatting and music humming, filling the air. You ask to be taken to the safety deposit boxes. As you present your key and the clerk goes to open the box for you, something weird happens. The lock falls into the box. And while your bandana collection and stacks of rare $2 bills should have padded the lock's tumble, instead you hear a clanging sound. The box is empty. You and the bank employee stare at each other for a moment, and then he gingerly lifts a finger and presses the face of the lock on the box next to yours. It slides easily away from the door of the box and clatters loudly into the empty box. Metal on metal, just like yours. You are quickly ushered from the vault and told to wait in the glass-walled meeting room that looks over the bank floor. Muzak fills the empty room as you watch the clerk scurry to the bank manager, tuck his head down, and whisper something. The manager looks at the clerk, shock briefly flashing across her face. She immediately regains her composure and picks up the phone. You watch her have a quick conversation, her face stone serious. You pull a rolled-up copy of Highlights magazine from your back pocket and start to flip through. You've done all the puzzle challenges and read all the stories. You toss the magazine in the trash. You reach into your other back pocket and you pull out a calculator. You type in 58,008. 58,008. Then you flip the calculator upside down. The display reads, boobs. You chuckle and return the calculator to your back pocket. From the front chest pocket of your short sleeve button-down shirt, you take a folded up piece of paper. You gently open it, careful with the worn creases and frayed edges. It's the abstract for Torsten Wiesels and David Hubel's about to be Nobel winning research into ocular dominance columns.
Oh, yeah.
You are just positive that in 6 months' time, they'll get the award for their work. After all, by depriving kittens from using one eye, they showed that columns in the primary visual cortex receiving inputs from the other eye took over the areas that would normally receive input from the deprived eye. The kittens also did not develop areas receiving input from both eyes, a feature needed for binocular vision. Their experiments, Zarin, showed that the ocular dominance develops irreversibly early in childhood development. And these studies open the door for the understanding and treatment of childhood cataracts.
A brutal but beautiful bit of science.
They were also important to the study of cortical plasticity. And so just then, though, just then, you see movement out of the corner of your eye. Suits coming into the bank with purpose. You fold up the document, place it in your shirt pocket. These guys are definitely feds. You just want to know what happened to all the stuff in your safety deposit box. The clerk comes to get you and takes you back to the vault. The FBI agents swarm the vault, peering into masses of empty boxes. An agent walks you over to the remains of your safety deposit box. Can you confirm this box is yours? Yep, you tell him. And there were items in there last time you checked? Yep. He sighs and hands you a form telling you to list all the items in the box and provide your contact information. You walk out to your Cadillac, positive you'll never disclose the extent of your bandana collection. Never, Zarin. So the feds took inventory and they worked out that 150 safety deposit boxes were very neatly broken into, 74 of them emptied out, more than $1 million in cash, as well as gold coins and other valuables, all gone. After Smarto punched the locks out, he replaced all of the cylinders in the boxes and swept up the mess. Wow. Meticulous. He hid all the trash in the ceiling so the vault looked totally normal when it was opened. And then as he's walking back and forth bringing bags out, doesn't look fishy. How did he get out? He hid in that corner dead space until the vault door was open Monday morning. Uh-huh. And according to U.S. Attorney Alan Grossman, quote, he took the risk that no one would be waiting outside the vault Monday morning. Because the alarm had gone off twice, he just calmly walked out. And then FBI agent Leroy Heimbach, he said that it was the first successful looting of a safety deposit box vault in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. USA.
Number one.
Yeah. Federal prosecutors said whoever did it was a, quote, criminal genius.
Not so, something they throw around.
No. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you more about this criminal genius.
Yeah.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Get back here, Zarin.
Oh, hey,
I'm sorry. William Smarto, hairdresser, bank burglar.
Bad Billy Smarto.
Bad Billy Smarto. By the way, he was still a hairstylist this whole time.
I love it.
Running perms, stubbing out grays, just the whole deal.
We're talking like early 80s perms. Like,
yeah.
The like Annie curl spiral perms.
Yeah. Tight.
Yeah.
Tight, tight, tight.
Frizzy.
And stealing from safety deposit boxes with the help of his brother.
Also frizzy.
Yeah. Super frizzy. They had no reason to stop.
No.
Vincent.
They're good at it.
Rented safety deposit boxes again, this time at the First National Bank of Lake Forest.
Mm.
And once again, under the name John Barrow.
Okay.
And once again, William Smarto made a ton of visits, cased the place, stored his tools, blah, blah, blah. At the Barrington job, he'd almost been a Robin Hood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was going through the boxes, and if he felt like he saw things in there that, like, mortgage notes or records that looked like the owner of the box couldn't afford to lose what was in there, mm-hmm. he'd leave it alone.
Hmm.
So that's why about half the boxes that were busted into weren't emptied.
Okay.
So he's like, it looks like these people need this.
Yeah. Well, I respect it.
Yeah. So back to Lake Forest. He visited the rented boxes 51 times mm-hmm. between mid-January and
51 times.
And Labor Day of 1982, so more than once a week.
That's, I mean, they all know you.
They totally know him.
They're to have stories about you.
Yeah, and at one point, he had to bring in big items like wooden shelves.
What?
Why?
How are you going to say, I do want to put these in. They're very important. Well, My grandfather bought these back in the old country.
He needed shelves to put, he wanted to put shelving in the ceiling, the drop ceiling.
Oh, I knew he would want it.
So what he did is he put them in boxes and said they were pieces of art and that he was a collector.
How big are these boxes?
I don't know.
How big are these shelves?
And, well, I mean, there was like IKEA flat pack is what I'm kind of imagining.
Okay.
That, like, he had to put it together.
Wow.
It's, you know, it's part of his sick artistry, Zarin.
So, he was doing flat pack before it was cool.
Exactly. So here we are, Friday, September 3rd, 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Abracadabra by the Steve Miller Band is at the top of the charts.
Yes.
First National Bank of Lake Forest.
I
want to
reach out and grab you.
a customer at the bank, an old man, he had to use the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Now, as they do.
Aren't you so happy that I didn't use this as the picture it?
I'm actually surprised.
I know.
Think the word is
I'm
surprised.
I'm a little surprised, too. So the guy uses the can. He comes out and he tells a bank employee that a wooden panel had fallen from the ceiling.
I wouldn't go in there for a couple of hours.
Well, yeah, he's like, a wooden panel fell from the ceiling. And the guy's like, dang, dude, what you doing there? No, that's not what he said. That is what he said.
I blew it out, man. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Like, it was major. So they call the superintendent of maintenance, who goes to like replace the panel. The only thing is, he goes up the ladder to slide the panel in place, and he sees something. Eyeballs staring back at him. He was face to face with the hiding William Smarto.
He didn't think to move. Yeah. He's like, I could back up
a foot. He just froze. Apparently, Smarto had planned to spend the weekend like breaking into the safety deposit boxes. And then he was going to leave the morning of September 5th, like in jogging clothes. He had jogging clothes with him. And he had stashed his van nearby at Lake Forest College.
He's a very on new trend.
Oh, yeah. And he had like this whole backstory. And so anyway, the police, they found 7 bags containing tools for breaking into safety deposit. Okay. Every time he brings more and more stuff. This time he had an industrial sized jackhammer.
A powerful lance.
Yeah, he had a telethermal lance. He had an electric saw to cut the hinges off the safe deposit boxes. He's like, it took too long to punch the locks. Let's just cut the hinges. He had a bottle of water, you know, stay hydrated.
Oh, like you're kind of, okay.
Yeah, and he also
Is he doing a chemistry thing?
No, okay. Just for sippins.
Yeah.
And then he had an empty bottle to pee into.
Why?
Just pee in the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
He had a radio, an alarm clock, gloves, scissors, 2 flashlights, pliers, 5 screwdrivers, and then his jogging
suit.
And
a ticket to the Cubs game.
Yeah. And January 12th, 1983, he pleads guilty to charges of burglary and possession of burglary tools, and he got sentenced to 3 years by Judge John L. Hughes. Hmm. Now, the judge said he hoped that the sentence would
John Hughes.
In John
Chicago.
John L. Hughes.
I heard that.
Yeah. The judge said that he'd hope the sentence...
He got Saturday detention.
That he would deter possible copycats. And the judge said, quote, it almost seems like it's a script for a television show or a movie.
Are we sure this isn't John Hughes' dad?
Right?
I'm saying.
John Hughes Sr.
Yeah.
About those other burglaries.
Calls his son,
though.
I got an idea for you, boy. Sorry.
So Barrington police, FBI agents, they questioned him about Deerfield and Barrington, the previous two. Mm-hmm. No arrests had been made in those.
Yeah.
And they noticed.
Totally his M.O.
Fully the M.O., John Barrow had rented boxes at all 3 banks.
Same name, yeah.
And just like that, Smarto is busted for everything.
Yeah, of course.
July of 84, while America is gripped with Olympic fever.
Oh, Mary Lou
Retton. Smarto and his brother Vincent, they're indicted by a grand jury for the safety deposit box robbery of First National Bank in Barrington.
So he missed out on all of Edwin Moses's greatness.
Everything. Ugh. Flo-Jo, everything.
Yeah, Carl Lewis.
Ugh. Yeah, they plead not guilty. Uh-huh. In February of the next year, Smarto, he gets convicted of bank burglary and conspiracy in federal court.
Okay.
Was Flo-Jo in 84 or was that 88?
I think it was 88.
Yeah. I'm jumping forward. Anyway, so he gets convicted. He's looking at 55 years in prison. Hmm. And Vincent was also charged, but he was really sick. He didn't stand trial. He had a severe heart attack, open heart surgery. Mm. His lawyer's like, he can't take the stress of a trial. They're like, you know what? Never mind. Hmm. We'll just let it go. And according to an affidavit, Smarto asked Vincent to open the safe deposit boxes, open those accounts at the 3 banks. And that around that time, Smarto was, quote, involved in a bitter divorce and was trying to conceal assets from his wife.
So we found a way to blame a woman?
Yeah. Pretty much.
It was his wife. I'm telling you. She pushed him to it. Exactly.
And then William said that Vincent knew nothing about any of these bank robberies.
Yeah,
he just thought he was getting, you know.
Yeah, you got to protect
I want to hide my stuff in these safe deposit boxes.
I like that.
Both Smarto and his brother, Vincent, they requested a severance of counts because Vincent didn't participate to the extent that William Smarto did.
Yeah.
And the criminal acts on the indictment are, quote, not all of the same or similar character.
Okay.
So in a plea for leniency, begging at the mercy of the court, Smarto's defense attorney, William's defense attorney, pointed out that his crime was nonviolent and that he himself was a caring father of 2 sons, a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old. And he went to point out that there was no evidence that Smarto had accumulated any wealth you know, since the robbery.
He wasn't blowing money on things.
Yeah. And so April 23rd, 1985, he gets sentenced to 20 years in prison by U.S. District Judge Marvin Aspen.
So no leniency is basically right. What you're telling me.
Well, hold on. So he gets sentenced for the three bank jobs, uh-huh. even though one of them is the only one that was successful. Yeah.
But they can connect him pretty easily.
Yeah. But the stolen goods were not recovered at this point.
Okay.
And so he also gets fined $25,000 by Judge Aspen, who called Smarto, quote, a very bright, multifaceted person.
Multifaceted.
And they say, you got to start serving your sentence immediately. He maintains his innocence.
He's like, sir, if I was so multifaceted, why would I wear this facet?
Yeah. And he says, like, I can't give you the loot because I didn't do it. I have no idea where it is. Mm-hmm. Judge Aspen not buying it, though. He said, now listen, I will reduce your sentence in exchange for you owning up to what you did. Mm-hmm. And you have to assist the authorities with recovering the missing items.
Okay.
Next thing you know, an anonymous package is left at Smarto's lawyer's office. The FBI goes to pick it up. They said it was obvious that the thing had been sitting in a river somewhere. It was like damp, moldy, gross.
Okay.
Smelled terrible. Inside, over 400 pieces of jewelry and other items.
Whoa.
A bunch of them, though, were cataloged as, quote, tarnished and or damaged. And so according to court documents, prosecutors said Smarto was, quote, trying to pull a fast one due to the fact that the most expensive pieces were not returned. Uh-huh. And the ones that were returned were damaged because, like, the gemstones had been pried out.
Yeah, totally.
So they were, like, brooches and rings. And one of them was a 10-carat ring.
Like, this is a really?
10-carat diamond ring, yeah. So some of the items not recovered, another 10-carat diamond ring valued at $128,000 at the time,
wow.
which is like $370,000 today.
Okay.
A platinum engagement ring worth $38,000. Gold coins valued at, you know, almost $34,000. A platinum and emerald ring, $15,000. And a brooch valued at $10,000, which is like nearly 29,000 smackaroos today.
You love those conversions.
God, I love the conversions. I had them for all of them.
Yeah, I could tell. I could see it in your eyes.
I was like holding on to them. So anyway, because of this, the U.S. Attorney's Office recommended against the sentence reduction. They're like, you know, he didn't give everything back. He obviously sold a bunch of stuff. Judge Aspen, he didn't listen. He reduced Smarto's 20-year sentence to 8 years. Due to the, quote, the defendant's substantial but incomplete restitution of the stolen items.
Wow. He gave him for good faith.
But then on top of that, he sentenced him to 500 hours of community service upon release and, quote, cooperation with law enforcement and banking authorities in developing internal security programs to combat potential bank robberies.
But 500 hours of community service, what is that? 2 full months of 8-hour days, five days a week?
Well,
so
that's
you
not
got
that
two
much.
Months of work. Yeah, that's not that much.
Yeah.
Come on.
So he had, but the bigger thing is that the judge says you got to work with the FBI to come up with protocols for banks to use to avoid people like you.
Yeah, teach us what you know.
Yeah, and thanks to him, that's why bank vaults don't have false ceilings anymore or dead corners.
Thanks to him. They decided that was a bad idea.
He worked with the FBI to establish.
They couldn't come with that on their own.
No.
They needed him.
So
wow.
Smarto, he sent the judge, Judge Aspen, a handwritten letter sharing the, quote, happy reaction of himself and his loved ones to the reduction of the sentence. And as part of his release, like when he got paroled, he was allowed to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's on parole. He in 1989, he went to New Orleans. 1990, he went to Spain. He hit up. He went to Wisconsin twice.
So he's traveling well.
Bermuda.
Then. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, he's
living
to Wisconsin.
They go right
from Chicago.
Son's living high on the hog. Yeah,
but he went to. He got a new wife.
New wife, new life.
New wife,
huh?
New wife. Bermuda.
Yeah.
They went.
Okay.
And it was never brought up. Like, how are you funding these trips? All this,
you know,
whatever.
Don't ask questions.
2011, he popped up again. This time as a real estate broker. And he hadn't burgled another bank, but his 85 conviction had come back to haunt him all those years later.
Why?
The Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, they issued a disciplinary order and they placed his real estate broker license, William Smarto of Lake Villa, on probation for 5 years, and then restricted licensure as a managing broker for 5 years due to his 85 felony conviction. Okay. Now, all I could find was the order. Yeah. So my guess is that he was acting as a broker and someone found out about it and ratted on
Okay.
him. It doesn't seem fair to me because, like, he did his time. He paid his debts in the way that were prescribed to him. I think he's still kicking today. There's an episode of Masterminds about him, but it doesn't tell much about his personality, just that he's this genius who was respected by law enforcement who hunted him. But I wish I knew more about him as a person.
Billy Smarto, call us.
Yeah. How did he get into hairdressing? what did he think about his crimes? How did his life go after he got out?
What did he think about the development of the Rachel?
What are his hairstyles?
I don't know. It's the only one I can think of.
What I'm trying to say is I want him to write a book.
Oh, yeah.
It might not be too late. No, he has not written a book.
Wow.
Please write a book. Zarin,
yes.
I'm going to cut you off before you ask me. Mm-hmm. My ridiculous takeaway is that I hope he writes a book.
Oh, man.
What's your ridiculous takeaway?
My Elizabeth takeaway. Thank you for asking. He didn't write a book?
He didn't write a book.
That's wild.
He didn't write a book.
No, in all honesty, do you think that, like, he doesn't have, like, a chip on his shoulder? Right? About being like, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm not a tough guy because I'm a hairdresser, right?
Oh, no, I don't
and
think
he,
so.
And he's not like he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder like, people didn't think I was smart, so I'm going to burn these people.
Yeah.
What was the motivator? Because it seems like he's kind of like a smart guy. He gets into real estate later on. Like, why did he have to do the, like, I know where I'm asking a very large question, but I'm like, what do you suspect? Did he get a thrill out of it? Like, getting over on the people from what you read? Like, is it the artist in him? Like, you know how an artist can very much enjoy either a performance or the plastic act of creation, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, was this his art?
I think so. I think that he recognized the vulnerabilities in it and was smart and realized, like, this is easy.
I
could totally do this. And there was an art to it. He was so meticulous and so careful in all the planning and
all the
prep.
More stuff every time.
And it's like, you know, you go to get your hair done and they're going to dye your hair and they lay everything out and they get it all ready. And it's like, I think that there was an art to it for him. And I think that he's just, like, too smart for his own good in that. But, you know, I wish him well.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah. You know what would make me feel better not being able to read a book of his, though?
What?
Is if I had a talk back.
Oh.
Captain D.
Talk back. Oh, my God. Did he just say that?
OMG.
I just finished listening to your episode about Lady Wonder, the psychic horse. And I just want to say, well done. You guys outdid yourselves. It is probably now my favorite episode that you have ever done. So thank you for that. And thanks for being awesome. And keep up the good work.
Wow. Dude, thanks for listening.
Done. Nice. Yeah.
We're always glad that somebody enjoys and has a new fave.
Yeah. And I like positive messages. We haven't really gotten any negative talkbacks.
Except for my mother.
We wouldn't censor them if we did get them.
No, I didn't get
but
one
please
from my
don't.
Mother.
Yeah, no.
She just calls me
Tell
and
your
says,
mom to stop
why did
me.
You do that? You're embarrassing the family.
That's all I have
that's
on
good.
That
Thank
happy
you.
Note. You can find us online at ridiculouscrime.com. We're at Ridiculous Crime on various social things, Twitter, Instagram, Friendster, MySpace. Email ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Leave us a talk back on the iHeart app. Reach out.
Send us a postcard.
Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Chicagoland's Frosted Tips expert, Dave Kustin. Research is by Marissa, feather the bangs, please, Brown, and Andrea, new year, new cut, new me, song Charpentier. The theme song is by two guys who collect the hair swept up from salon floors and store it in safety deposit boxes, Thomas Lee and Travis Dutton. Post wardrobe is provided by Botany 500. Executive producers are surly bank janitor Ben Bolin and trusting vault clerk Noel Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The wait is almost over.
Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.